Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. The Jersey Wrecking Crew is in the house.
Oh,
Jeff Martin.
We're back, baby.
And I'm Brian Berga, the trendsetter. We talk about a lot of stuff, guys. Everything is, if not everything, but everything has happened right now. What to dive into, we have no idea. We're going to talk about the Raw SmackDown Superstar Shakeup, as Vince McMahon says.
It's time to shake things up again.
Yeah, we'll talk about the winners and losers and just kind of the story angles now leading into Payback. I can't believe we're past WrestleMania now. We're going to be talking about the next pay-per-view, kind of starting the new year. It's kind of like Happy New Year happens at WrestleMania now. It's like the event where, like, the day after New Year's, you're like, I don't want to do anything anymore. So you're looking forward to that Payback, which is kind of the first pay-per-view of the new year in the WWE. So we'll be discussing that too. First, Jeff, how are you, man? I haven't seen you in a while.
My hangover is gone.
Is it?
I'm now used to being back in Jersey.
Grasping reality.
It just smacked me in the face as we got in there. And it's funny, getting on the plane, I'm saying, give me the green. And I'm like, the hell.
You're like, what's the point anymore?
What the hell's the point? Came back to a drizzly metropolitan area, but I'm good now. I'm ready to go.
The weather's warming up now, so it's not too dreary as it was when we first got back from Orlando.
And I gotta say one thing: we're gonna talk about the roster shakeup, which we'll talk about whether it was, you know, too soon because they just had it in July, and we'll talk about, you know, how Raw looks like they kind of like took a lot of the talent from SmackDown. We'll get into that. We also got Marty Elias coming up here from Lucha Underground, the senior official.
Very excited
about this.
And of
course, we're gonna talk about also, since the Undertaker did kind of give his farewell at WrestleMania. We were there, we saw it, putting the hat, the trench coat and the gloves down in the middle of the ring, and we kind of were like, wow, this is it. And if that was his final match, we'll get a chance to talk to Marty Elias, who actually refereed that classic and now nominated the best matchup in WrestleMania history, WrestleMania 25, the first Shawn Michaels Undertaker. So very excited to talk to Marty Elias.
What's funny about that, Jeff, is that, you know, we're going to be talking to Marty, and we witnessed live Undertaker's most likely last match, and Marty probably reffed Undertaker's greatest match that he's ever had in his career against Shawn Michaels. So it'd be great to get his perspective of, you know, what does he feel about the Undertaker? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people say that dude can retire whenever he wants to, but I think if we're reading the signals correctly, and, you know, I'm terrible with women, so I don't know how to read signals. that's true. So then maybe if I'm reading them right, then that will be the last time we'll see the Undertaker. But then I could be completely wrong, because this wrestling business, you know, you never say never, and you never know what's going to happen in a year's time. But I think it's time. He's in a lot of pain, and he's got to deal with some hip surgery. So, you know, hey, dude, go out in the
sunset.
Yeah,
we'll get in depth on the match, what kind of guy the Undertaker is, what he remembers of the Undertaker, and just, you know, if he has any final thoughts, if this was his final match. But again, also we're going to talk about Lucha Underground, too, which he's invested in, and also
We to an extent, like
and the best thing is it's on Netflix now, and we can actually watch the first two seasons, get caught up on Lucha, and so that's great, man. That's a great thing.
That's
for great
Lucha binge watching right there. If you're ever sick, or not even that you need to be sick, but if you ever want to like just stay in for the week, binge on Lucha Underground and binge on wrestling. We can't get enough of it.
And of course, GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, that is coming out too on Netflix. So lots to talk about with Marty Elias. So looking forward to that. But
yeah, before we get into that, Jeff, you know, social media the way it is right now, it's going crazy and haywire. I mean, like I said, we'll talk about the superstar shakeup. But right now, when you're talking about like these brands, Raw and SmackDown, and how the commentating team has kind of seen a little shakeup too, I can't help but be remiss to think back, where is Mario Ronaldo in all this too? Because it's not
Mauro,
too.
Yeah, Mauro.
Mauro, yeah. Because right now they're dealing with a lot of issues where, you know, JBL is being talked about. Should he be, you know, should he be reprimanded? A lot of anti JBL chants going on. I mean, what's your take on the whole story that's developed now between Ronaldo and JBL?
Well, here's the thing. JBL, I think, is stuck in that old manner where we all wish sometimes it could be, where it's not politically correct. That politically correctness that wasn't around back, you know, maybe 10 years ago. So he's stuck in that mentality of being old school. And, you know, you had the ribbing. You had the putting shaving cream in someone's suitcase, or you had the stealing passports, or you had the, you know, just all that crazy stuff. And we were talking about how wrestling is a really weird business. You could get heat for not shaking somebody's hand. You can get heat for wearing sunglasses in the, you know, inside the building, come off as arrogant, as was one of the cases for Simon Gotch, who a lot of people thought he was arrogant just because he, you know, didn't come off right to the boys. If someone offers you a drink, you don't drink it, or you're introvert.
It's really easy to get heat in this business.
It's so weird. It's crazy how you can get heat. So he's to the fact where he's on Fox Business. He's a multimillionaire, very successful in that field as a wrestler, the longest running champion in SmackDown history, I guess. Here's a guy that has seniority, and I think it's a guy that stuck back 10 years ago where that stuff right now doesn't float. You know, with the whole bullying thing, with the whole Jonathan Martin case against, you know, Richie Incognito in the NFL, and you have those things. Now you need to be more aware. Times have changed, so you can't do that anymore. And Mauro Ranallo, the thing that bothers me is, here's, you know, a guy knowing that has a mental health issue. He is bipolar, and he has tough times dealing with these things. He was living out his dream. This is all he wanted to do. If you looked at his interview the night after he called his first SmackDown, the guy, it was his dream. It's all he wanted to do. And to take, you know, take advantage of that, or to, you know, pick on him, just because, you know, it may be easy to do so, or just because it gets...
Like pick on the new guy, basically?
It's just not interesting. At the end of the day, he wasn't WWE's cup of tea, and I think it was frustrating because WWE doesn't want to hear that all the wrestling fans are like, well, this is the greatest announcer of all time, or, you know, one of the best, and he's starting to find his niche, and everyone loved him on the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was a fan favorite, and he was getting critically acclaimed by all the fans. He wasn't WWE's cup of tea. And it's a sad story because, you know, you want to see Mauro, you know, do what he loves. He's great at it. Can you criticize him that sometimes, oh, you know, it's not always a WrestleMania match? But you know what? He's enthusiastic, and he's talking to you as a fan. He actually teaches you the wrestling moves. But the WWE wants you to tell a story. It's scripted television. So they want you to tell, you know, about the rivalries, about this and that, and not
the match. Is he falling under
itself,
the same scenario as like Joey Styles fell into, where he was, you know, he was so well in depth in terms of walking you through a match and kind of telling you the holds and the moves and giving you some type of psychology? But because WWE loves telling stories, that was already against Ronaldo the moment he walked in, because they would always make the joke, not everything's a WrestleMania, but he has so much enthusiasm that you lived off. And I thought it worked well for the mere fact that back then when SmackDown was taped, he gave you more of an exciting atmosphere tone where you actually took it like, wow, something actually could happen here, even though it was a taped environment.
And he was perfect for SmackDown. I don't think he would have been Raw's cup of tea. I think he was perfect on SmackDown because that's the wrestling show. The worst thing that happened was when Raw, you know, sent JBL over. And I think that's when, you know, it was like, wow, you know, that's when it all started, you know, because then JBL started. Listen, we don't know. We're not there.
Yeah, we don't know the rumors. We don't know the details. But my question to you is this, Jeff. You know, we talk about bullying and stuff like that. JBL, most likely, he has a different type of personality that maybe, like you said, Ronald's maybe not the WWE's cup of tea. Maybe JBL's personality isn't everybody's cup of tea either. I mean, you hear like legends and Hall of Famers like Jerry the King Lawler saying, you know, you really have to get to know JBL. He can come off as that type of brash personality. Is that more of an excuse, or maybe certain people are too sensitive to the point where, you know, I would talk about back then of everything being...
He has a lot of people on his side.
Yeah, he has a lot of people on his side, obviously, but everybody trying to worry about being politically correct and things like that. Are people a little bit too oversensitive of stuff nowadays, too?
I am one of the biggest proponents that we're too politically correct in the society, and I don't like it. But in this case, when you... Because it's Mauro, and I like the guy, you don't want to... I hate bullies. At one point in life, someone's dealt with a bully, and the feeling sucks, you know, unless you're one of those one in a million that have always been, you know, the person. You know, to get picked on is horrible, and the very fact is it just makes JBL look like a jerk, you know. And then you hear the stories that Miz, how he got, you know, hazed by JBL. How Edge also brought up a point where he's in the shower and then JBL gets puts on a cowboy hat and starts, you know, bathing right in Edge's stall. I mean, that stuff is like, okay, I get it. It's like, you know, hazing and stuff like that, but you don't do that now. There's one thing where I wish we were more society.
I'm just surprised more now, Jeff. I'm sorry, and I'll let you finish your statement. I'm just more surprised now than anything. And not that I'm completely picking one side or the other, but I'm just surprised how it's just so shocking to people. It's like for example, the Incognito story. Are we that shocked that there's still hazing going on in professional football? Yeah, although the business has moved on and it's become more professional, people walking in suits now and they're not as partying as much as they do. They're playing video games in the back and not cards and dice, whatever. Are we that shocked, though, that this still exists? That's what surprised me the most. I mean, I feel bad for Nal and the whole JBL situation, how this puts a bad light on WWE as a whole company, how professional they're supposed to be. But why is everybody so shocked about this? It just amazes me. Like, you didn't expect it? It's like, wow, JBL can be a jerk sometimes?
No, I didn't expect it, the fact that he would pick on Mauro. And we all know that, you know, okay, it's one thing maybe pick on, you know, Todd Phillips or, you know, Otunga, but, you know, this is a known fact that Mauro Ranallo has a mental health issue. So okay, why are you picking on somebody like that? Listen, I'm not surprised, although when you look at social media now, it seems like everyone just plays video games back there in the backstage, you know? Yeah. But older guys like JBL who are not in that, you know, millennial generation don't do that. They're old school. They're like the Stan Hansen back in the day, you know, that kind of mentality. Yeah. Is just to me, if it is true, WWE needs to fire JBL because they do, and this is what bothers me too.
Fire him or take him off TV?
Fire him.
You'd fire him, okay.
Okay. And the fact that they're hypocritical with the whole be a star and the anti-bullying, and the fact that right now there's reports saying they're trying to settle with Mauro and that he can't mention JBL, and it just shows you how much they stand by his side, it's just sad all in general because SmackDown is going to suffer because you enjoy Mauro Ranallo. And the saddest part is a guy who had a dream. He said it was 20 years in the making, and now he's not going to be on SmackDown. And it's very sad, and he's not going to get to, you know, live out his contract because it ended in August. But it just all in general, it's just I can't believe we're talking about this. And come on, JBL, grow up if that's the case. But, man, he just comes off as a jerk. And Mauro, and I just feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, whatever side you pick or wherever this ends up being, which it looks like they're going to really buy him out and terminate his contract or kind of make it legality-wise where he can't speak about it and JBL move on and be fine. I just like to hope cooler heads prevail because he is a talent. I do enjoy listening to his commentary. I think he's, you know, I'm not going to say he's one of the greatest of all time, but he was close to being there. And you hate, like you had mentioned before, this was his dream. And for the mere fact that something as juvenile as this led to the end of something like that, it's just really sad to talk about. And it's just really discouraging. And you like to think we've all grown up and matured. But, you know, I always make a joke with some of my colleagues that I see in my other places at work. I thought we graduated high school how many years ago, Jeff? And it's still always blabber, gossip, picking, name calling. So to me, that's why I mentioned to you, it just surprises me how something like this is so surprising to people because it's always around. It never goes away. But I understand the circumstances and situations where, you know, especially with a company, a publicly owned company like WWE, you think they would be now more professional than that and get out of the 90s and the 80s that they were back then. But unfortunately, it still exists. That's why Alberto Del Rio will go on his rants on Periscope.
And the saddest part is, too, is that it didn't end. It wasn't ending well for Mauro. They put Todd Phillips in there. You had a four-man booth. Are you kidding me? There's no elbow room. It's like sitting at WrestleMania in the front row. You're like, you know. It was crowded. And so you could tell.
Yes, WWE, we got to take RC home with us, though.
We did. And, you know, Mauro won't be able to. But they were phasing him out, you know. And it's just sad that he couldn't live out the contract. And we'll find out. Hey, you know what? He's still got the MMA. He's still got the boxing. So, you know, bigger and
better
things.
He'll be fine.
And he'll be. But you know what? He'll be fine, but he shouldn't have to be fine.
I understand that, but it'd be more upsetting, though, if something like this happened and then Ranallo has nothing else to fall back on. Like, you're still taking food off his table because of what they're paying him. Yeah. I'm sure they'll buy him out and stuff like that. But again, he has other options. Unfortunately, sometimes people in this business, whether you're talking about talent that are on TV and talent that are actually in the ring, sometimes, depending on what happens, they're not in a good situation because they don't have another option outside of this. So for now, yeah, it doesn't make it right, Jeff, but at least I can somewhat feel comfortable enough that, you know what, he'll get over this, it'll be fine, and he'll be the better for it because I think a lot of people are taking his side anyway.
Yeah, so again, you know, we just wish the best for Mauro Ranallo. Hope this all gets situated. And, you know, wish him nothing but the best. And again, JBL, you're a jerk, in my opinion. But listen, the Superstar Shakeup happened this Monday, and I'll be honest with you, I think it's too soon because it happened in July. But, you know, WWE likes to shake things up after WrestleMania. A week afterwards, they decided that we're going to shake things up again. And, you know, you saw Raw with the first shot fired early before Raw and Apollo
Crews.
First shot fired. First shot fired.
They took the first shot.
They took the first shot and took Apollo Crews, which was like, whoa, you know, get out of here, you know?
Yeah, I was about to fall off my chair. I was like, what? Apollo, my God.
But as it evolved,
SmackDown's got nothing left now.
Later on in the night, we'd see more superstars come over from SmackDown to Raw. Your biggest take on Raw's night as far as their acquisitions of SmackDown superstars?
Look, I look at the people that were brought over to Raw, and this is not a shot at any of them because I love Bray Wyatt. I think Dean Ambrose, you know, he does serve a purpose. Do I think he's championship material? I don't know. I don't think he really needs a title nowadays in terms of his career. Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, Miz, Maurice, Kalisto, Apollo Crews, Curt Hawkins, David Otunga, who won't be there for 6 weeks because he's going to do a movie that goes straight to DVD.
Thank God.
Slater and Rhino and Elias Sampson. Jeff, I just read off the names of who are the new superstars. You look at The Miz and you look at Bray Wyatt. I look at a guy like Apollo Crews, so much potential there. But I still have a firm believer he should have stayed in NXT because he could have, you know, done something there to build himself more in terms of relatable to the audience. I don't see a huge, like, to me, when I hear the term shakeup, Jeff, I'm thinking, wow, I didn't see that one come.
Yeah,
that's
AJ
a major
Styles.
Blow. If AJ Styles went to Raw, I'd be like, wow, that
Randy
is a huge,
Orton,
huge thing. I didn't see that here. And honestly, I don't think SmackDown Live really lost anything that they couldn't replace. So this wasn't similar to a draft. This was more of just like, all right, we're going to move one, two pieces here and move one, two pieces there.
I think it's these guys needing SmackDown more than SmackDown needing them. The Miz definitely needs SmackDown. That's where he was coming into his own. Maurice helps him out a lot. And then the first day, he's coming out there and he's losing to Sami Zayn.
Weren't you the one that said, too, that he was kind of getting lost on SmackDown Live, too?
No, I liked him on SmackDown Live. Okay. I thought he was doing a good job. I didn't like that he lost to Cena, but still.
Well, nobody likes that.
Well, he's getting up there to be a higher echelon guy, and I think if he's going to get lost in the shuffle, it might be on Raw. So here's a guy that I was like, what's the over and under that they screw up with The Miz? And then gets to talking 8 minutes later, boom, loses to The Miz. So loses to Sami Zayn. So it didn't take
too
long.
He lost himself.
Yeah, lost himself. And it didn't take too long for The Miz to get used wrong on Raw. And talk about a guy like Bray Wyatt. We're talking about a guy that, to me, you know, has had a bad three matches of WrestleMania, really got the short end of the stick on all the matches, really hasn't, you know, proven. He's had 30 renditions of the Wyatt family. He lost to Randy Orton. That was ended up being a meaningless title run, if you think about it, transitional champion while he held the title for Randy Orton. And now he goes to Raw. So, you know, when is he going to make an impact? Besides everyone being fun that they love lighting up their iPhones when he comes out, besides that, when is he going to finally get that run? When is he going to be, you know, legitimate? Where are we going to think of him as that guy that he's supposed to be?
Listen, Jeff, this is where you and I always get into the same types of frustrations. We get into the big arguments, and we blow up, and we scream and yell, and then people are thinking that we're fighting with each other, which, you know, 9 times out of 10, we are fighting against each other. But the thing is, you talked about a long time ago that, you know, that supposed brass ring that Vince McMahon goes out there. I mean, I don't know what Bray Wyatt has to do, and more importantly, I don't know what The Miz has to do, because I think both of them right now, in terms of their characters, are just suffering tremendously. They've done everything that's required of them to do to this point to be somewhat substantial, to make themselves credible to the audience that they could draw money. I don't know if a guy like Bray Wyatt now, as much as I'm a fan of his, and he seems like a great guy, I don't know if that's in his future anymore. Everybody talked to him about him being like the replacement of The Undertaker. I don't see that because now he does promos. He went out there and did a promo on Finn Balor after he was half concussed by a Jinder Mahal. And maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I'd be like, whoa, the demon against the Eater of Worlds. That's so cool. Now I'm like, what credibility does Bray Wyatt have now? Because everything he does and he says he's going to do, he fails at. He loses the big moment.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, biggest thing was WrestleMania 30. He should have been John Cena. It was not going to hurt John Cena at all.
No.
It was talking about legacy. What about Bray Wyatt's legacy? He doesn't have much of a legacy now. John Cena was a made man and still is a made man to this day. John Cena could lose every match now to the end of his career, and he would still be as relevant as he was, you know, his first,
I agree,
you know, 10 title reign that he had. It just makes no sense to me. As for Miz, and I will ask you the question off air before we did the show, is he just stuck in purgatory now? Is he just going to accept mediocrity?
On Raw, he is.
But just with the WWE in general, Jeff.
Intercontinental Champion, I don't think he will ever get that world title shot. Yeah, I the Universal Championship.
It's because the WWE doesn't they believe in him enough where he goes out and he talks and he represents the WWE in certain ways. But I don't think they believe in him to be a face, to be a champion, a main
face
champion.
That runs the place.
Yeah, face that runs the place. A face that
I think
the
worst.
Runs the
I think the worst loser in this is Talking Smack, because I love The Miz on Talking Smack. I don't know, maybe he can make Raw talk maybe, you know, watchable and controversial, but The Miz had a place.
I'm sure Daniel Bryan's happy he's gone.
Oh, I'm sure Daniel Bryan is.
He's like, yes.
But I think the best part of Raw, and I think the true winner is in all of this, is SmackDown, because AJ Styles stayed on there. You still have the best wrestler.
I watched to the very end of those three very tough hours to watch, and at the end I was like, AJ Styles didn't come out. Wow, that really hurts the Raw brand. And that's what ended up happening, though.
And we're going to get to Marty Elias coming up shortly, but you know, we'll get to SmackDown on the end around after the interview with Marty Elias. But I think one thing we have to also, before we get to Marty, is touch on this, the whole Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns. I'm telling you, man, it was hilarious. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. To have a guy who you had as a heel, who beat The Undertaker, who had an amazing promo, who had his best promo the night after when he says, "This is my yard now," and just walked out, to have all that heat on him, and then you interview him like, "Well, I didn't want to do it to The Undertaker. Oh, you know, is this his last?" To have him be, oh gosh, gee willikers, and then having him get beat up and have actually Braun Strowman actually, you know, turn babyface because everyone loved Roman Reigns getting beat up, and they were saying, "You deserve it." And then to top it all off, the coup de grace, the cherry on that ice cream sundae, was Braun Strowman lifting up that ambulance. And I'm telling you, man, there were so many things that you can dissect.
That was the cherry. That was the sprinkles. That was the whipped cream. That was everything.
I was laughing my ass off. And Brian, your thoughts on this whole, I think, mess up of Roman Reigns and how they messed up and dropped the ball on a heel. The biggest of all heel turns in Roman Reigns.
Well, talk about missed opportunities, right? And again, it seems like to be like the common theme with WWE right now when it comes to opportunities.
Drop the ball.
But here's the thing. If you don't want him to turn into a heel, fine. But then here's the thing. You have him defeat The Undertaker, and then you have him get his ass handed to him by Braun Strowman. So it makes me wonder, what was that whole thing with him beating Braun Strowman clean then? What was the purpose of that? What was the purpose of Braun Strowman not winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal? I mean, talk about a guy who had momentum. I would butcher Braun Strowman. I'll be the first to admit it. When he first started, I would write articles for BustedOpenNation.com. I'd write articles about, I called him Braun Greenman because he was so green. He has jumped leaps and bounds, and he has actually the crowd behind him, which is probably what the WWE doesn't want. And now in this scenario, when Roman Reigns is getting beat senseless and he's your babyface, he's your hero, he's the face of the company, and fans are chanting, "You deserve it." And they're saying,
man,
you know,
best chant of the night.
They're chanting that for Roman Reigns. I'm like, do you not understand you're losing the audience here? And, you know, everybody, you know, guys like, for example, I've heard Road Dogg say things like, "Well, you know, you're still buying tickets to go see him." No, we're buying tickets because our kids want to go see him, not because we want to. We have the right to boom and stuff like that. Everybody thinks that this whole thing, this whole negativity of him doesn't exist. Like the whole thing about John Cena never existed. Oh, it's just a cool thing to do. Yeah, maybe now it's the cool thing to do to chant Cena sucks, John Cena sucks. But now, I don't know if this is a cool thing to do. I think just the audience in general just don't want him to be there.
And now they're getting angrier. And now they're rebelling even more. Because you know what? You're not listening to them, Vince, Triple H, or whoever's there. You're getting on the audience's nerves. You think, how dare you try to still be hard-headed and stubborn and push Roman Reigns now as a good guy and a baby face? The crowd is going to even even just boo him even more. That's what you've done.
It's not going to stop anytime soon. And you can mute it all you want on the network, on USA, whatever you want to. You can mute that audience and make sure you don't hear it as much. But the evidence is there. Maybe in the live shows it's a little bit different, I guess, because more kids attend that, I guess. I have no idea. I haven't gone to a live event in a long time. But this is getting worse. And it's getting to the point for me, like, I'm not shocked by any of this. I expect it. But I'm like, really? How much further are you going to take it? But in our experience, Jeff, the WWE will see this full front. Roman Reigns is their guy. Whether we like it or not, he's going to be the guy.
Tunnel vision. And then they see Roman Reigns as the guy. And hey, if John Cena couldn't go heel for 10 years, neither is Roman Reigns. So
instead of beating up John Cena, we're beating up Roman Reigns.
Beat up Roman Reigns. And hashtag on that note, we got a great interview coming up. Marty Elias, senior referee for Lucha Underground. We got him on especially because since it might have been possibly Undertaker's final match in WWE at WrestleMania, this year's past WrestleMania, we want to get a perspective on the WrestleMania 25 match between Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, voted unanimously now, I think, as the best WrestleMania match in history. And, you know, who better to talk about Undertaker and just that match and just Undertaker's career in general than Marty Elias? You know, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Lucha Underground. We're going to talk about GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and his involvement with it. And just so revved up to get a chance to talk to Marty Elias.
Let's do it right now.
All right, Brian, we have a great interview lined up right now. We got Marty Elias, who is the senior referee official.
Shut up. You got Marty on?
Oh, I do, from Lucha Underground, and I want to thank him so much for giving us some time. You can follow him on Twitter, at MartyElias1967. Marty, how's everything going, my man?
Life is beautiful, man. Things are great. How are you?
Good. Listen, we brought you here for a lot of reasons. We're going to get into Lucha Underground very shortly because, you know, doing great things with Lucha Underground. But we were at WrestleMania, we went to Orlando, and we witnessed what possibly was Undertaker's final match against Roman Reigns, and we also noticed that, hey, you know, one of the matches, actually the match that's been voted the number one WrestleMania match of all time was Undertaker Shawn, and who reffed it but none other than yourself. With Undertaker possibly being his last match, your thoughts on just what the Undertaker meant to WWE, to you, and just the wrestling fans all over?
Oh, man, he means everything to the business, man. I mean, and for me personally, when I seen WrestleMania, you know, because I was watching it, of course, because I love watching what everybody's doing. But when I seen him start taking off the gloves, man, I just started getting a feeling that, oh, my God, I think this is it. And then when he put the hat down and he put the coat down and he went out and he, for the first time ever, broke kayfabe and he went and he kissed Michelle, you know, I started, you know, tearing up, man, because to me that signaled the end, you know, because Taker had never ever broke character like that for anything, and to see him do that and leave his gloves and his coat and his hat in the middle of the ring, for me, you know, that was just a little overwhelming, because I mean, he's meant so much to the business itself as a whole, not only WWE, but just as who he is and what the character is and how long he's been doing it, and everybody he's worked with, everybody he's put over, everybody who's put him over. I mean, it's just, he's been that constant go-to guy. And, you know, to see him hang it up, for me, it was a very emotional moment. And I posted something and I said it was an honor and it was a privilege to have worked with him. And knowing, you know, that I was there for that greatest match ever, you know, that's something, you know, that I'll be able to look back on and, you know, share with my grandkids eventually and go, you know what? I knew that guy. So there you go.
Yeah, no, it must have been amazing to be able to know him, to speak with him and talk with him. Can you talk a little quick about the kind of presence he had in the locker room? Everybody talked about how he was cool hand Luke. He was really the authority figure back there, kept everyone in check. From your experience when it came to, like, for example, WrestleMania, you know, the 25th anniversary, and you're in there with him and Shawn Michaels and Pat Patterson going over the match, what's the feeling like in the locker room when he's there?
Taker, for me personally, was the godfather. And you know, I'm sure that other folks had different names for him, but for me, he was the godfather. And his presence alone spoke volumes, where he never really had to, you know, raise his voice, nor once did I ever hear him raise his voice at all. Did I ever see him talk to somebody or pull somebody aside? Absolutely, many times. Did I go to wrestler's court and you know, be there? Yes.
So it does exist.
Well, you know, I was there, and you know, I seen it, and you know, it does exist. You know, just like Santa Claus is real. So there you go.
Yes, finally, somebody believes in Santa Claus like I do.
Yes, Santa still lives to this day, man. Come on,
you gotta believe, man. It's like wrestling.
You gotta believe
in wrestling and Santa Claus. I mean, come on, Marty. That match, WrestleMania 25, has got to be probably the highlight. As you as a referee, now that it's, you know, almost getting to 10 years since that match, what are your thoughts of the match? You said it was only supposed to be 15 minutes and it was going to go on third. Just looking back now and reflecting on that moment, what are your thoughts? What stands out the most to you?
The thing that stands out the most for me is when Sean got billed out, he did the skin the cat and Taker got him. Tombstone, 1, 2, 3, and Sean kicked out. That was the first time that Undertaker had ever shown any emotion, ever. He'd never showed any type of emotion, but when Sean kicked out, you know, that was the first time. And for me, that false finish was just everything that I'd ever worked for. I mean, all the blood, sweat, BS, no pay, you know, not getting booked, you know, just everything, you know, the broken relationships with people, my family, my wife, I mean, all the sacrifice. That false finish for me was the world to me, and to this day it still is. And that's something that stands out for me in that match. When Sean kicked out of that, I mean, that's when everybody went, oh my God, is Sean going to be the guy to break the streak?
Yeah, that was a great moment, as now they say, quote unquote, WrestleMania moment, to be a part of and to you know, be there firsthand seeing. Was it like a day off, knowing that these guys have been in the business as long as they have, or was it more as intense as the match portrayed itself to be?
No, for me personally, it was very intense. And what I did is just being with those guys, you know, because I had worked with them before, you know, but this was WrestleMania. And Sean, oddly enough, can work TVs, he can work live events and everything, but when you get him in that WrestleMania environment, Sean's a whole different Sean. You know, so is Taker, and so is everybody else for that fact, because this is WrestleMania. So for me personally, working with those guys and being in that match, they elevated me to where I needed to be. Not to say that I was right at their level, but I was right there with them. And everything that I had worked for and everything that I've been trained to do and everything was elevated that match. And it was up to me to be able to be in that match and to keep up with those guys and to be there and to be that referee and make history.
I mean,
history he did make, yes.
The referee is also too important to that match, you know. So a lot of wrestlers talk about the difference between doing a WrestleMania or a big show at a small arena or doing it in front of a stadium. Now, That is without a doubt one of the best matches ever. Could you feel the fans' reaction in such a huge stadium like the Reliant, or was it true what they say that it's better a feel in an arena type atmosphere?
No, you could feel it. Actually, when I started to feel it is when we went on the outside, and when Sean started going to the outside, and they went in, and Sean went for the moonsault on the outside. I could feel the crowd just moving, you know, because they had already built up in the ring. And when Sean went out for that first time, and you know, he went up and he missed the moonsault, you could just feel that whole crowd and just the vibe of just everybody, you know, what was into this. And by that point, you could just feel that everybody was engaged in the match, and they were going to be taken on a ride.
Man, we were taken on a ride. I still relive that. I'll still go back and watch the WWE Network free plug there for them and enjoy it and be like the first time I'd seen it. Never get tired, never gets old. But again, that's the WWE. And for me, I've always been a big advocate of, you know, there's stuff outside the WWE. Everybody likes to talk about it because they're the number one game in town and, you know, nobody's going to compete with them. The whole Monday Night Wars thing with WCW. But, you know, now moving on to something like other promotions out there, and specifically Lucha Underground, which I have to admit, though, Marty, I first heard about it, I wouldn't say I wasn't a fan, but I was like, okay, well, it's probably like another promotion that's trying to copy the WWE. Jeff kind of opened my eyes to it. I looked at it. I saw a couple episodes. I was checking on like YouTube, and it's nothing like WWE. And you made a nice, great comment in some of your YouTube videos where it's like it's revolutionizing professional wrestling. What if there's one thing you can pick out of why it is so good, what would it be?
The writing.
Yes.
The characters. You know, with Lucha Underground, it's funny you say that, you know, that, oh, God, you know, because I, too, was of that opinion at one point for about 10 seconds when Chris DeJoseph was pitching Lucha Underground to me. And I'm so glad, you know, that I paid attention and I took a leap of faith and I said yes, you know, because here we are today with Lucha Underground. But for me, it's just the writing and the characters are so completely different than what WWE is doing. Not to say what WWE is doing is bad, because everybody has their own niche. Lucha Underground niche is the fact that it's character driven, storyline driven, and it's almost like watching a TV show, which it is. And that's the thing, you know, that people need to understand. And I think some people get confused there because the lines are so fine. Is that Lucha Underground is a TV show. It's not a wrestling promotion. Whereas WWE, Ring of Honor, you know, Impact, those guys are promotions and they're doing live events all the time. Whereas we're doing seasons and it's a TV show. But you see that because the characters and the storylines keep going. And you see the character development with the vignettes, the in-ring stuff. I mean, just all of the above. So I think that's what separates Lucha Underground from a WWE and an Impact, and that's what makes it so unique.
You're talking about Chris DeJoseph, and you have, you know, like Chavo Guerrero Jr. too producing. Just how important is their leadership, and just how what's it meant for just morale and just for the future of Lucha Underground? You guys are now on Netflix now, seasons 1 and 2. So what does it mean for you guys to have people with experience like that to run Lucha Underground?
Well, it's great in a sense that, you know, Chavo, Johnny Mundo, you know, Chris DeJoseph and other guys, myself included, I'll throw myself in there. We've all been to the show, so to speak. And, you know, we know what it takes to be at the show and to be successful. So with a lot of folks at Lucha Underground who haven't had that experience, whether it be TV or just, you know, being, you know, on something at this level, it's good, you know, to say, hey, you know, this is what it's like, and this is how you do it, and this is why you do it. And if you don't believe us, well, okay, you know, try going there or try going here, because it's a lot different. But I will say this, that the locker room environment and the chemistry that we have at Lucha Underground behind the scenes is so much different, because everybody has a little bit of input and everybody has feedback, you know, where everybody is like, okay, you know, they're putting in their own little 2 cents and stuff. And at the end of the day, that's where you get all the great Lucha Underground stuff. WWE and other places, you know, where you have one guy, where it's Vince who has the final say and with things of that nature. I know that Hunter's doing other stuff now too with NXT and such. But bottom line, WWE, end of the day, it's Vince McMahon's decision. Whereas Lucha Underground, there's a little bit more flexibility and freedom, where people have that opportunity to develop their characters the way they see fit and then run with it. So, you know.
Does anybody have a final say there, supposedly? I know it goes through channels, but is there one person say, all right, this is the final person we're going to make this decision?
Chris DeJoseph.
Okay.
And now you guys have an atmosphere that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a small arena. It's really close up. How do you think that also
the temple?
The temple. How do you think that
the
experience
temple,
for the
brother?
Yeah, exactly. And let me tell you,
don't blasphemy here. It's the temple.
The temple. And
it's religious.
And tickets are hard to get, and it's always packed. How do you think that intimate audience helps with the whole production aspect of Lucha?
It helps it out tremendously because. Well, let me ask you this. Have you guys been to the temple yet?
If I could get a ticket. That is awesome. That is a great atmosphere. I would love to visit when we do go out to California, too. That'd be awesome.
Okay, I'll tell you this. If and when you guys visit and we're up and taping season 4 and such and everything, I'll say it right now and you guys have it recorded. You guys will be my guests. You guys can come into the temple and check it out. and feel it for yourself. You know, notice I didn't say see it. You can feel it for yourself. Yeah. Because with the temple, that's what really gives us a whole different spin on what we do, because the crowd, the audience, the believers are so involved with it. It reminds me of early ECW, where ECW had all their fans and guys who were known and such. And, you know, it's that vibe, you know, where everybody is so close and so intimate that you can feel the blood, sweat, and tears, and you're right there, and everybody is just so amped up, and it's just, it's something that you need to experience, put it that way.
Hey, I feel it watching. I can only imagine what it would be like actually sitting there. And Jeff, there is no guardrail, so don't think that if somebody Irish whips themselves into us, you know, I'm using you as a shield. I'm just letting you know that right now. But the thing I wanted to ask is, Jeff had mentioned to it, and you were saying the feel of that environment. It's very close-knit. You kind of compared it to like ECW, right? And that you could tell that too by watching on TV. Didn't have a chance to go to the ECW arena myself personally. But the thing with that is, with anything like this, you had mentioned before, like when I talked about Ring of Honor, Impact, those are promotions. This is a show. But with anything, you always want to evolve and go in. You're going to the fourth season now. Have there been talks possibly of, maybe in the near future, depending on how it goes for season four, of maybe moving it out of the temple? And could this be something?
That's blasphemy.
Could this be something? Hey, but again, all religions have to break out. On this, I build rock, you build my church, and you know, that is a church. Is there any sense of possibly maybe expanding this out, maybe taking it on the road? Because people are following it, and they love it.
Yeah, you know, with everything, and you know, I like to say this, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And right now,
unless you're Roman Reigns.
Underground.
I'm sorry.
Roman Colosseum, Roman City, you know, Rome, Italy. with Lucha Underground, here's the thing. It took off. It has this cult following. And when you're a TV show and it turns into this vehicle that you didn't think what was ever going to happen, it starts putting things in a different perspective and everything. So right now I can tell you that there's a lot of plans to do different things, albeit live events, touring, merchandising, all of the above, mm-hmm. because what happened was, is it took off like it did. People were just so consumed with it and wanted more of it and everything. You know, it was one of the things where, you know, everything just had to, you know, put the brakes on it and go, whoa, wait a minute. You know, let's see what we got here and let's go and do this right. You know, we don't want to make the mistakes that other people have made by just hurrying up things and trying to get things out there just for the sake of getting it out there because it's popular, so to speak. So right now there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. You know, some of it is known, some of it isn't, but there's a lot of things that are happening right now. I know back in October, November, we did some in vivo live events. We did Houston, Phoenix, and San Diego. We were sponsored by Cricket Wireless, and it was amazing to see these crowds outside of the temple. But to leave the temple, I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. I know that there's been talk about possibly expanding the temple to fit more believers in there.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's been talked about. Is it going to happen? I don't know. But just to set everyone's mind at ease, there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes, a lot of planning, a lot of building, a lot of, you know, things that are going to see Lucha Underground go to that next level, hence going to Netflix and being on Netflix right now was something that we had talked about, you know, during the first season. And here we are, you know, getting ready to go into the fourth season. And we just were on Netflix. So, you know, like with everything else, it just takes some time and it takes some planning, because the good thing about Lucha Underground and the LRA network is that it took off so fast that the LRA folks went, oh, my God, we didn't know what we had. We didn't know that these wrestling fans were so fanatical for this product and for this brand that, hold on, let's give it to them the right way. So that's pretty much what's happening right now.
That's great. And like a true showman, too, you're leaving them wanting more, and everybody wants more of Lucha Underground.
I think that's a mistake.
Absolutely.
Some people do is, like, we talk about other promotions, too, where they try to take advantage of that hitting mainstream, and then, you know, then the audience has its fill, and then they're not as interested. So I think you guys have obviously intelligent people A great dynamic running Lucha Underground. And the whole Netflix deal, that's huge, Marty, because Netflix is like everyone has their Netflix account. Everybody's on that thing. It's one of the most popular things to do is make it a Netflix night and to catch up on Lucha. It's just a tremendous idea. And then also, too, not to, you know, start going outside the temple and, you know, oversaturating the market because, like Brian said, it's the art of leaving them wanting more, and I think you guys do that very well.
Thank you. Yeah, and, you know, Lucha Underground wasn't something that just was thrown together. I mean, it took a lot of planning, a lot of writing, a lot of just different stuff. And what you guys are seeing on Netflix is just the combination of just everything that came together. And, you know, like with that WrestleMania 25 match and with Lucha Underground, I like to compare them because it seems like all the stars and moons aligned and everything is coming out pretty good.
You talk about that WrestleMania 25 match, Marty. You've officiated a lot of matches in Lucha. Has anyone come close? Which matchup right now in the short history do you look back and be like, wow, this is a masterpiece that we did here at the temple?
The one that I absolutely loved was Pentagon in the Gauntlet match with the Stardom Girls, Io and Kairi and Mayu. I mean, to me, it was so great working with those girls because those girls are so talented. Not to take anything away from our girls, but those girls were just phenomenal. And for me, as a personal bucket list, I always wanted to work with Io. She's such an amazing talent, and I've met her in the past, but I always told her I was going to work with her, and I finally did. And, you know, that match is just something that just stands out for me. You know, of course, there's been others, you know, working with Johnny Mundo and his all-night-long matches and just anything Johnny Mundo. But that match itself is one that is a real highlight for me thus far with Lucha Underground.
Marty, I got to say, we were at WrestleCon. We follow a lot of, you know, promotions here in the Northeast. I got to tell you something.
They're not a promotion. They're a show.
Shows. I know, but I'm talking about promotions here in the East. I got to tell you, Joey Ryan is worth the price of admission.
He's a character, man. I remember when Joey first started. You know, like, that's how old I am.
No, I'm telling you, man. And
Marty doesn't want to date himself.
I should just stop right there. I'm telling you, it's a blast watching Joey Ryan. I just bring that up because I know he's in Lucha, but just see him in person, I mean, just the whole thing he does is just, it's tremendous.
Yeah, and you know what's so great about Lucha Underground? Like, you know, like we kid in the back, you know, that Lucha Underground is probably the land of misfits. You know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Misfit toys, yeah.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Misfit toys and everything because, you know.
I got a feeling you like Christmas, Marty.
Yeah, I do. I really do. But what I mean by that is, you know, of course, you know, you got the Joey Ryans. Joey was with TNA, had a little bit of exposure. Then, you know, they gave him his future endeavor. You know, you had Willie Mack who was signed to a deal, and then they, you know, let him go, you know, a couple weeks before he was supposed to report. And just different people, Sammy Callahan, you know, just different folks, you know, who were let go or released or just whatever. And, you know, they really didn't get an opportunity to make their mark with, you know, a WWE or an Impact or a Ring of Honor or whatever. But here they come to Lucha Underground and they get these characters and they're running with them. And it's like people are experiencing them for the first time, whereas as wrestling fans and wrestling folks, we know who these guys are and girls, but yet Lucha Underground is presenting them in a way that it's fresh and it's new, and people are really getting into them going like, oh my God, I remember hearing about Willie Mack. Oh my God, I remember Joey Ryan from TNA. So Lucha Underground's giving you that as well, and that's what I really love about the product and about what Lucha Underground's doing. It's these characters. People really need to get back into characters. And I think that that's what wrestling is missing right now, hence excluding Lucha Underground, because I think that Lucha Underground is right on point when it comes to character storytelling and building.
Definitely. I mean, I would probably say Lucha Underground is second to none, basically, when it comes to character development, because you had mentioned that up right in the beginning. We were talking about the writing. The writing is very important, and you really can tell that in terms of the commitment of the storyline, the commitment of the characters being developed. And it's something that takes time, too. Everybody thinks it gets done quickly in a day, and that's not the case. But what I found really interesting is that, you know, you're talking about characters. You're quite a character yourself, Marty, wouldn't you say? Because you're somebody who loves this business, and Jeff and I love it so much. That's why we talk about and decide to do this show. But it's a thing, it's like, it's a passion for it. So for me, Mr. Ruby, if I may call you that, because that was your first wrestling name, right?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
A.K.A. Mr. Ruby.
You went there. You went there.
Oh, I went there because I'm going all for it right now. There is no tomorrow for me. But the thing I want to say is that you wanted to be in there. You had the respect enough where you wanted to be a wrestler. You wanted to take the bumps, and you start from that process working your way up. Something I admire a lot about you, Marty, is your work ethic. I mean, you bust your butt because nothing came easy, and you were willing to work for it. So for me, what started with that passion that you wanted to do it? And is that passion you have right now when you first started and Jesse Ventura was like, we have no space for your kid. We don't need no reps right now. Till now, is that passion still there for you?
The passion is still there, but it doesn't consume me like it used to. And what I mean by that is when I first got into the business, I mean, it was wrestling 24/7. And that's what I try explaining to folks who are getting in or newer people who are just a couple years in or whatever. You know, if you're going to do this, you need to go balls out and you need to do it the right way. For me, wrestling consumed everything in my life. As a matter of fact, at one point, sadly enough, I told my wife and daughter that wrestling was number one in my life, that nothing else mattered to me. And if they didn't like it, then tough. You know, that's how deep and passionate I was about this. And am I passionate about it like that today? No. I'm passionate about it, and I love it, and I know that I'll always be a part of it. But it doesn't consume me like it did. It was 24/7, 365, and that's what I think really pushed me, is that there was nothing that was going to stand in my way. Of course, I wasn't 6'8", I wasn't 380 pounds, nor was I good-looking. Nor very talented, but I knew
stop
I
it! Don't demean yourself there. I know you're a humble guy, Marty, but no. Stop it now.
but here's the thing: nothing was going to stop me from achieving my goal, and my goal was that I was going to do something in pro wrestling. Didn't know what it was, but I knew I was going to do something. So when I started out training, taking all the bumps, learning what I had to do, and believe me, there was a time where all I did was take bumps for the first 3 months of my training. And the next 3 months, all I did is ran the ropes and everything. I set up rings. I sold tickets. I sold programs. I swept buildings. You know, I loaded trucks, unloaded trucks. And I even did that when I got to WWE. And that's one of the things, you know, that I did with GLOW. I mean, I'm the wrestling ring technician for them. I set up their rings. I'm all about safety. But I had a goal. I had a vision of where I wanted to be, and I knew that I was going to do it. And what I did, I was my own self-promoter. I made videotapes. I made, photos. And at the time when email was just starting up, I was emailing people at WWE. I was emailing people at WCW.
And dial-up.
Paul Heyman letters. Yeah, dial-up. Yeah, remember that?
Get a phone call, get logged off. Like, damn it, I just finished my email.
Yeah, I'm still old school, and I still have my AOL email. How do you like that?
I still have it too. I don't use it, but I still have it.
Yeah, so I really just humped and just bumped. And one of the things I like to pride myself on is that I know that WWE referees have worked some of the independents and such, and I know, some of the other guys got in by way of knowing people or whatever. But one of the things that I pride myself on is that I worked all the independents. I did all that wherever I needed to do, and I worked in Mexico. But I also went to Japan on my own, and I worked with Hashimoto and Otani for 0-1.
Wow.
And I did that pre-WWE. So I like to pride myself, even to this day, is that even though I'm not with WWE, I'm still working like that. Whereas, of course, I'm involved with Lucha Underground and such, but I'm actually able to go, and I've worked the World Cups. I've worked the Triple Mania last year, and I'm scheduled to go to this year's Triple Mania. So being able to do that as a referee and not being a worker, I really pride myself on that, you know, I've really worked my tail off and achieved my goal, even though I was with WWE and not with WWE, that I'm still humping and I'm still bumping. And it's one of the things that I tell people all the time. You're going to put yourself where you want to be. If you're not where you want to be, when you get up in the morning, look in the mirror and go, okay, where do I need to be today? You know, the way I like to say it is, a goal is reached 1% every day. I mean, if you can do 1% of your goal every day, then you're going to get there. But it's just one of these things, just work hard. You know, if you have a goal, go do it. And don't let anything ever stand in your way. Don't let anything ever stand in your way, and go do it. And that's what I tell people all the time. And I live by that.
Wow. I mean, that's just, that's awesome. And then also, too, representing Latinos and Hispanics, you know, it's a role model, too, man, that you do, you know. And, you know, we're Hispanic and we're doing a show here, a wrestling podcast, and we're trying to find our niche, be different, because there's tons of wrestling podcasts, but you want to be different, you know. You want to, just like Lucha, try to be different, try not to be the same. That's what we try to do. And, you know, just great words of motivation. You made a perfect segue because you mentioned GLOW before, and I wanted to reach on that. Tell us about that and that endeavor that you're going to, and it's going to be on Netflix as well.
Yeah, coming out June 23rd.
Yeah. June 23rd.
I mean, that's
June 23rd.
That's great. I remember watching GLOW in the original. I remember, you know, I remember the match. I remember seeing, you know, the girls with the poofy 80s hair and and Hollywood Vine. I remember that. I remember that. So I think it's a great idea to bring something back like that, to some nostalgia, and just to see the way you guys take your vantage point on it.
Yeah, I would, of course, and segueing back a little bit, is that I really pride myself on everything that I've done. And what I mean by that is I wasn't with WWE, but I humped my butt to get there. I worked Japan, I worked Mexico, I worked all the independents. And then after being let go from WWE and everything, I'm still doing it at that level. Whereas I'm doing Lucha Underground, I'm doing the AAA stuff, I'm doing this and segueing into Hollywood, which is GLOW, and being a part of this and everything. So it's not like I sat on my hands and went, oh my God. Although I did leave for 3 years and didn't want nothing to do with wrestling because I was burnt out at that point. But then, you know, I got convinced to do it again. But I pride myself on that. You know, whereas I don't think that other referees are doing that.
Yeah.
To that level, is that some guys have been released and they're not doing this or they're not doing that. Whereas I've been able to be consistent and still be relevant, if that makes sense. But getting into the GLOW thing, GLOW, I actually was brought in by Chavo.
Okay.
Chavo is the consultant, the wrestling consultant who worked with the stunt coordinator and such, and they needed somebody to come in and train. So Chavo, you know, got the gig, and Chavo said, you know, like, who's going to take care of your rings? And they go, well, what do you mean? They said, well, yeah, you need somebody to take care of your rings, because Chavo had called me and asked me if I knew people who do rings. And of course I do, because that's another one of my gigs with Lucha Underground and with GLOW, mm-hmm. is that I'm the guy who takes care of the rings. I'm the guy who, you know, has the guy fabricate or whatever. They purchase everything. Yeah. I just give them. So they asked Chavo asked him, you know, well, who's going to set up your rings and maintenance your rings? And they went, well, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, you just can't have a ring set up and just think that it's going to be okay. So Chavo goes, I got the perfect guy for you. He's like, you know, he's one of my boys. You know, he knows everything about rings, you know, and, you know, he can help take care of them. He can do whatever. And so Chavo called me up, asked me if I was interested. I said, yes. I spoke to the executive producer, you know, figured something out. And I went and I set up the rings. And the next day we had our first training. And the actresses and singers and models or whatever, you know, they were so blown away because none of them had ever been inside a ring, let alone next to a ring. So it was very interesting to see the reactions. And oddly enough, what we had to do is we had to modify the rings, because most normal rings make a lot of noise with the wood and the beams, mm-hmm. and all the other bells and whistles. We actually had to modify it and put different type of foam on the actual ropes and on the actual canvas and stuff, you know, whereas the producers wanted it to be a little bit more quiet. So we did that for two reasons: for the safety of the actresses and for filming, because when you're filming, the last thing that you want is all this clanging and banging going around and, you know, you can't get the shot or you can't hear the line. So that's what we did. But I mean, it was great being a part of that. I can't wait for season 2. Apparently there's rumor things are going to pick up, you know, early fall. So looking forward to that. I mean, I was actually asked to referee an episode. So I can't wait for that to come out. You know, they dolled me up into the 80s and stuff. So that was pretty awesome. And
did they give you an afro?
Every day. No, they didn't. But, you know, wait till you see it. It's
What about one of those stashes, those porn star stashes, you know?
A little Joey Ryan stash.
A little Joey Ryan style. I know you can't give it away, but still, that's what we're thinking in our head. Marty's going to have like a Joey Ryan mustache on. Or Tom Selleck
can't
mustache.
Can't give it away, but you're going to laugh.
Awesome.
You're going to enjoy it.
Well,
but,
so
just being a part of that whole Glow experience, getting to know everybody and just working on a great product, you know, it's going to be a hit. I can guarantee you it's going to be a hit.
Well, it looks amazing. We saw the trailers for it. Really excited to see it on Netflix when it comes out. And again, if there's a season two, like you said, there is. Can't wait to see you in it as well and rocking that stash. But you had mentioned before, like when the actresses came in, and I always find this really appealing because I've been in a ring. I've never taken a bump before in my life, but a friend of mine who does a lot of independent scenes would always help me, like would say, come in the ring, you know, take photos with the kids and stuff like that to help out. And it's very intimidating. So I can imagine when actresses go in there, they first take their first bump and like what I've gotten myself into. How much type of conditioning did you have to go through? Because like, you're talking about all the things you're doing, reffing and going here and there. How do you keep in shape for all that yourself?
I do a lot of cardio. I do a lot of cardio, and I do cardio for one reason, and that's just to keep up with the boys in there. The other thing that I've been doing for about 4 years now, 5 years now, is DDP yoga. And DDP, there's a plug for you there, bro.
We do it as well.
Dallas sent me the entire program one time, or actually I reached out to him, you know, when I wasn't having any type of success and I was feeling like crap. I reached out to him and, you know, he sent me the entire program for free, which was amazing on his part. And I've been doing it ever since. And I do daily stretches in, I do my yoga. He's got a whole breathing thing that he does that is amazing. But ever since I've started doing his yoga, my whole core and everything is just so much better than what it was. You know, I actually feel better today than what I did 10 years ago, just because of the fact, you know, that I'm doing his yoga and I'm able to stretch my core and just muscles and, you know, just arms and things like that. And knock on wood, you know, God has been good to me, where I really haven't had major injuries to my arms or my knees or things like that. Although, you know, I have been hurt, the show must go on. But at the same time, had I not been doing the yoga and stuff, I think the injuries could have been a lot worse. So it's DDP yoga, trying to eat right, which is hard to do, you know, when you like to eat, and
I know that.
Cardio.
No, that's great because you have to have great conditioning, and you know, as time goes by, it's normal wear and tear. So it's, you know, DDP, you know, one miracle at a time. Jeff, and he's done great. We do the program as well. We love it, so we can definitely vouch for it as well. And man, we're free plugging him here. Something I want to ask you, Marty, is that, you know, nowadays the evolution of wrestling has changed. Before, it used to be people go through the Indies, they'd go across the countries, Japan. They still do that, but not as much now since there are no more territories anymore, and WCW is bought out, and there's not enough places out there where people can kind of practice their craft and learn their trade. So the W came up with the Performance Center. That was a great concept, great idea. We visited the facility during WrestleMania weekend. It's state of the art. It's great. I mean, I'm sure if anybody wants to be a professional wrestler would go there. Now, that's for WWE superstars or people who want to be wrestlers, of course. Now, I know you ran a seminar in February, right, for referees. And I thought that was pretty interesting because when you really think about it, there's not really a place for that. Now, I don't know how many people would say, I want to grow up one day to be a referee. I'm sure they all want to be superstars and, you know, headline WrestleMania. But how important is that now, especially in this business now, where you don't really have individuals like yourself who have, you've gone through the ranks, have done it the right way, have paid your dues, and have all the experience? How do you compensate that to be able to make sure that as time goes by, there'll be referees that know how to do their job and have a lot more experience?
Well, you know, thank you very much for plugging that. And, you know, it'll segue into June 11th. I'm doing another referee seminar for Texas Wrestling Academy for Rudy Boy Gonzalez out in San Antonio, Texas. So
nice.
Got another one coming up. But you're absolutely right. You know, that's one of the things that I've scratched my head for a long time, is that there isn't really a place for referees to go and learn the craft of being a good referee. And unfortunately, schools have guys who sign up, and what they do is they like maybe a guy just isn't cutting it as a wrestler, or they just feel, he would be a better referee. So they say, well, hey, we want you to be a referee. Let's train a referee. And one of the things that I've noticed is that most schools, academies, don't have anybody training referees. Well, if they do have referees, they don't have a referee who's earned his stripes, so to speak, teaching people. And that's really it scratches my head, and it got me thinking for 2017 is that, you know what? There has to be somebody, and I chose myself, to teach people how to do this the right way, because it's such an art form and it's such a vital part of a wrestling match that if people are doing it the wrong way, then it's going to mess up a good match. And that's what I pride myself on, is that when I get in there, and this is not to say that I'm him or, I'm that good or whatever, but when I get in there, my confidence level is I'm losing my train of thought there.
No, but your confidence is that high, right?
My confidence is that
high. In yourself.
High, in myself, that I go in there, that I'm the Shawn Michaels of referees. I go in there with that confidence level. It's not an ego thing or saying that I'm at his level. It's just I go in there knowing that I'm that good, and then when I go in there, that none of the boys are going to have an issue with me messing up a spot or messing up a time cue or whatever, that they know that they can worry about the match itself and not worry about some kid in a striped shirt messing up a match. So one of the things that I've seen is that wrestlers are training referees. Not to say that's bad, because, it's always good to learn. But if you don't know what it is to be a referee, and a good one at that, or how to work TV or live events or work for the man himself, then how can you show somebody how to be successful? And that's one of the things that I pointed out in my seminar, is that I showed them tricks of the trade on how to enhance things and how to make things better and how to be there but not be there. Because here's the thing that I was taught a long time ago, is that as a good referee, you need to be there but not be there.
Talking to Marty Elias. You can follow him on Twitter at Marty Elias 1967. Former WWE referee, now the senior official referee for Lucha Underground. Getting back to Lucha, Marty, and thank you again for your time. Listen, I'm
having a ball talking to Marty.
Marty, and this is like just like a regular convo between three wrestling fans here. I want to see, on my bucket list, I want to see this wrestler wrestle in person. And before, bigger things happened to him, and I know he wrestled with you as Prince Puma. How special a talent is Ricochet, Prince Puma, in your eyes?
Oh, the guy's going to be successful. I mean, if he's not already successful, he has a very bright future. But one of the things, and this is just me being around for as long as I have and seeing these new generation of guys coming in and things of that nature. And it's one of these things is slow down.
Yeah.
It's all about longevity. He has a bright future, and, it's going to be cool to see where, his career takes him, because, he's doing a lot of great things.
He definitely is, and his future is bright. And like you talked about, longevity, not only for the athletes in the ring, but you spoke yourself too with referees, and in terms, like you said, teaching them the right way, and obviously taking care of yourself, doing the right stuff to make sure that your longevity in the ring continues as well, which we appreciate and we admire. Like you said yourself, right? Or at least I've mentioned it to Jeff too. A great referee can make the difference between a great and a bad match. As talented as the individuals are in the ring, as well as their timing might be, it's that ref that really has become the unsung hero. Everybody likes to scream at the ref, it's a three count, you do your job, you're missing this, but it's all part of the show.
So start using the referee.
It's appreciated, yes, and we appreciate you, Marty. But again, Jeff talking about Lucha Underground, I mean, this is a person I needed to see when we do visit California and visit the temple, and I'll make sure I'll, you know, yeah, I won't fanboy here.
We won't embarrass you, Marty, but...
We won't embarrass you, but I can't make a promise on this, though. When I see Katrina, I can't make any promises there, man. I promise you.
Okay.
I'm just letting you know that, you know. I had the pleasure of seeing her at WrestleCon, and she is she's very talented. I saw her coming up from NXT and what she's done now and developed that character of Katrina. It's just amazing, and it goes right back to what you're talking about in terms of character development.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, exactly, too, what's important, too, is that, you know, how, you know, you have a masterpiece, but you need somebody to portray it. I think you guys got a great deal with getting Matt Stryker as to be your lead announcer, too. I think that's a great get. I don't know what happened with WWE, but I think WWE's loss is your gain. I think he does a great job in calling your matches along with Vampiro.
Yeah, Matt's a very unique individual, man, and he has his style, which is cool. And, you know, he comes across very intelligent because he is. The guy's a teacher, for goodness sakes. and you know, for him, you know, to have the experience with WWE, but coming over here and blooming, so to speak, to what Matt Stryker should have been there, I mean, it's very cool. And that's the thing, you know, that I love with Lucha Underground. You're seeing individuals, you know, come out of their shells, so to speak, and be that talent, you know, that people wanted them to be, or they should have been. But, you know, the same thing with Johnny Mundo. I think Johnny Mundo's in his prime, and, you know, he's doing things that are just unbelievable. You know, me, myself personally, you know, Lucha Underground has given me the opportunity, to do these, videos that they post on social media. You know, I've got to go do speaking engagements. I've got to do autograph signings. You know, I'm doing interviews with you guys and such, you know, whereas, you know, unfortunately, you know, I didn't have that opportunity in the past. And at times, you know, I didn't think people wanted to hear from a referee, but, you know, Lucha Underground's given me that whole different spin and saying, yeah, you know, you are important, you are a talent, you are a referee, but you're a talent and you're there for a reason. So, yeah, we want to promote you too. So I'm blessed and grateful for that opportunity, man.
Yeah, and we're blessed and grateful to have you on too. And, hey, you know you've made it when you made it on the High Spot Podcast. So,
amen.
Exactly. Amen to that, brother. And real quick, I have to ask before we go, is Katrina seeing anybody right now? Is she available?
I have no idea. Yeah.
Put in a good word for me, Marty, please. Put in a good word for me.
The trendsetter, Brian Berger.
I got to take it where I can get it, man, seriously. Hey, you know, just like Marty, I'm the squeaky wheel, right, Marty? I'm trying to make myself noticed out there. So
if
she wants to ignore me, then, you know, let that be. I won't be a stalker. I can't promise anything. But no, we appreciate you. We appreciate you on coming on the show. Really enjoy it. Like I said, nothing but the greatest respect and admiration Jeff and I have for you, because we've seen, like I've mentioned before, you coming through the ranks, and it's something that Jeff and I like to pride ourselves in too. Nothing's ever come easy for us. We don't expect it to be easy, and we don't expect to sit on our hands and knees basically waiting for opportunities to come. We want to take advantage of them when they do. So if that offer is good, we would definitely want to make a trip down to see the temple in person and obviously meet you as well.
Oh, awesome. The offer's there, guys.
Awesome, Marty. Thank you so much. Again, Marty Elias, thank you so much for joining us. Anything upcoming that, you know, you plug GLOW, your seminar for referees, anything else you want to plug here while we wrap up here?
I have some shows in July at a country western festival in West Virginia. I'm doing a show this weekend with Rey Mysterio at SoCal Pro's 10th anniversary show down in Oceanside, so I'll be working there. That's pretty much all I have going on right now. But, you know, who's to say? You know, follow me on social media at Instagram, Marty Elias 67. If people would like to interview me or book me, they can email me at bookmartyelias@gmail.com.
That's awesome. Oh, one more thing I wanted to ask you too, Mr. Ruby.
Sure.
You're into music a lot, right? So if you came out as a wrestler with that name, Mr. Ruby, what would your theme song be?
Ooh.
What would my theme song be?
What would you want to play?
Glorious.
No, not... Well, you're into rock, right? So what rock song would you want to come out for? Or it doesn't have to be a rock song. What song would you want to say, yeah, I want to come out to this? For me, it'd be like, for me, AC/DC, Hell's Bells. I get that intensity for me. But again, everybody uses AC/DC. What would you use for yourself, you think, if you were a wrestler?
Probably Got Up Thunder by Kiss, you know, because yeah. I'm a huge Kiss fan. And see, and it's funny you say that, because people just see the referee or wrestling or whatever. I'm very passionate about music. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Kiss fan, huge Motley Crue fan, huge metalhead. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you say music, I mean, you know, that's a whole different animal that people don't even know or even see, you know, that, oh, man, you know, this guy, you know, has interest outside of wrestling or refereeing. But, yeah, man, huge Kiss guy.
Nice. You come into that, Mr. Ruby headlining WrestleMania. I love it.
That's tremendous.
Marty, thanks so much. Thank you for the time. And definitely keep in touch. We'd love to have you on again when you guys get into your season.
Absolutely. Sounds good, guys.
Thanks, Marty.
God bless, man.
And that was Marty Elias. Man, great stories on The Undertaker. Did a little Undertaker retrospective for you. As you know, as the dead man might have wrestled his final match, what we think was the final match at WrestleMania in Orlando. But, man, just great talking to Marty Elias. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him down the road. Lucha Underground, just great things going on with that. And, of course, his involvement with the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. You follow him on Twitter at MartyElias1967. So, great interview, man.
Yes, it was great, Jeff.
Great.
It was great. No, it was just, you know, I feel like I'm always repetitive here, right? And I hate being that way because I always want to be original. I never want to be like, oh, it's the cliche thing to say. But, you know, and kudos to you, Jeff, and I don't give you enough credit, which I don't want to anyway, but I'll give it to you here. You do a great job of bringing in guests, and people were very enthusiastic. And speaking of Marty, you could just tell with that, with all our guests, really, there's just so much enthusiasm there. I could talk to him for hours and hours because it's the passion that you and I both have. We love talking about professional wrestling. We love talking about stories. And more importantly than all, we respect it. As some people might frown upon it and see it as taboo. Oh, how are you liking that? You know, it's so fake, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but it's an art form. It's a masterpiece out there when they put it all together. And seeing something like Lucha Underground, for example, which I'll be the first to admit, I never really gave it second thought, but I started kind of seeing trailers and stuff like that. So I was like, you know what, I'll give this a try. And I haven't seen episodes yet, but I've seen, you know, the recaps and things like that. It's actually pretty intriguing because what they do is they take it from a completely different perspective, which is why I've told you several times, most people want to compete with the WWE and do exactly what they do. People don't have the bank account. I mean, you could maybe be, you know, now the president and have that type of bank account, or you could be Bill Gates and have that type of money, but you're not going to compete with the WWE. Stop trying to be like them. An entity like Lucha Underground does a great job of being who they are, and they stick to it, and that's what I admire most about them. They're, and that's why it's so intriguing to watch, and I can't wait for them, because it used to be on El Rey TV, right?
Yeah.
And now it's on Netflix, which everybody watches, so now nobody has an excuse not to see it, and it could be a better move right now for the company.
Yeah, I had to watch it on Unimas when it came out, the repeats, because I didn't have El Rey. I might have El Rey now, but...
Well, this was before I had an iPhone, so I couldn't catch any
of
that stuff.
Exactly, so now I had to watch it on Unimas, one of the Spanish television stations, so...
It'd be us when we used to watch ECW, and we only watched on MSG at 2 in the morning, but again, maybe it was a repeat or didn't air.
Oh, yeah, MSG,
so we're kind of anticipating.
2 in the morning, you're like, wow, 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 wow. It's extreme, and you see the, all, you know...
But it wasn't in sync because the episodes didn't line up. You're ahead two or you're back
one.
I felt
like we were doing something wrong watching ECW in 1998 at 2 in the morning.
But it felt so right.
Right? I felt like, you know, your parents were walking, like, ah, you know.
Yeah. And again, I never went to an ECW event. I compared NXT, the environment there, to it. Now, I've never been to an event where they were doing Lucha Underground filmings there, but I have a sense from when you see it from the audience, and it's not a huge setting, but it's there. They have a niche. They have some type of identity that people are really drawn to, and you can see it when you talk to Marty and just watching it, too. You're going to notice that. Again, how do you compete in this world of professional wrestling? Stop being like everybody else. Be different, and they are.
Yeah, I mean, like so many wrestling podcasts are the same. Try to be different. That's what we're trying to do here on the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. But SmackDown, you're talking about a show that's the wrestling show.
SmackDown Live, baby.
Best part of it was they didn't lose AJ Styles. And
yes.
You open up the show, Kevin Owens comes out, and clean-shaven Kevin Owens, and he walks in. And
didn't even recognize
him. Can I tell you one thing that I saw when he was in the ring? I was like, boy, he really likes Chris Jericho, because he's copying Chris Jericho's gimmick that he did when he saw that movie, and then he came out in the suit and he started using the long words that Brian, my co-host, tries to do, but he always screws up. But actually, Chris Jericho actually got the words right, and he's like, do you understand what I'm saying to you right now?
At least I'm screwing up complicated words when you're just screwing up basic sentences and grammar, Jeff.
So did you think that Chris Jericho, I thought Chris
it's
Jericho
funny how you mentioned
I
that. I didn't really think about it until you actually just brought it up. But yeah, it does make a lot of sense. I mean, even Chris Jericho said it, like, once this is over, him and Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, most likely the rivalry at Payback, he's like, you're going to see the true Kevin Owens. And he's basically just a mirror of, I wouldn't say he's an exact mirror, but again, he is trying to copy that type of gimmick, it seems to me, at least. And it's kind of interesting. I guess maybe, you know, moving to SmackDown Live gives him a new sense of, let me kind of, I wouldn't say reinvent myself, but let me give myself a new look here because it's a, like a new dawning in my career.
Owens is smart, man. I mean, I like it. I mean, I think it's, like you said, reinventing himself, never being the same thing. You saw him one way on Raw, and now he goes to SmackDown in a completely different way. Did you see the Talking Smack afterwards?
Yeah, I saw that too, and I thought it was great. I think, believe me, honestly, Jeff, Talking Smack, and you mentioned it with The Miz, and how you're going to feel bad that he's not on there, too.
I'm going to put my shoes up on the desk right now and talk.
Yeah, it's done wonders, man. I don't think Raw Talk works or anything like that, but Talking Smack, and I'm not a huge fan of Renee Young. What I'm a huge fan of is that they give the talent the microphone, gives them the ability to kind of just share their personalities. Despite whatever the question might be, they show their personality. I mean, I think it's worked wonders for Baron Corbin. I think I've known more of his personality now than I've ever had, or I would if I just saw him speak on the microphone in the middle of the ring with the crowds booing him. It gives them a dynamic to really showcase themselves. It works for Alexa Bliss. In this case, Kevin Owens, he's a seasoned guy on the mic. He's not going to get flustered. He does a great job of delivery. And he basically stated it too. He's got a gigantic chip on his shoulder. He hates Raw for drafting him so low. He hates SmackDown for not even considering drafting him number one. So he's literally got a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't care about getting along with Shane or Daniel Bryan. She tries to be respectful for it, but he mocks the idea of this is the land of opportunity. Now, when we compare the two, you know, Raw, obviously, compared to SmackDown, there's more opportunity on SmackDown. That's why most people would prefer to have gone to SmackDown rather than go to Raw. But I just think everything SmackDown Live is doing now for a two-hour show is so good. Their storylines are so compelling. And now Kevin Owens just brings that with him. And it's just amazing because, you know, if you look at a steal, that's a steal. Because Raw wasn't doing anything with him. And now SmackDown Live is going to have a great thing for the fact that you have now AJ Styles there. You have Shinsuke. You have Kevin Owens. Sami Zayn seems to follow Kevin Owens wherever the hell he goes. So that's something like he can't get rid of. It's like what Sean used to say, that little nugget that you flush and doesn't go down.
Always
sorry,
talked about
Sammy.
Him going to SmackDown. Now he's there again.
Now he's there.
The nemesis, the foil in Kevin Owens' life, as it seems.
So much for this being the last time these two are actually going to see each other again, right?
And then, of course, I like the way Shane McMahon also presented the newest acquisitions, too. I think they
threw a couple curveballs there.
Yeah, Tamina. And then, of course, I think one of the crown jewels of the whole get was Charlotte Flair. But I don't get one thing. The guys going over to SmackDown, why did it feel like they were going to like TNA or WCW? They got destroyed. They got like pushed or de-pushed on Raw before they went to SmackDown. Charlotte was on a losing streak. They did everything possible to talk her down on Raw, like, oh, what's going on with her? And then, you know, and then she comes to SmackDown and kind of, you know, the same thing. Kevin Owens loses on his way out too. It just seemed like there was a lot of bearing on the side of on Raw before they knew they were going to lose their guys to SmackDown.
It's funny you say that too, right? I kind of saw that too, but the same
New Day too. I'm sorry, the way they lost the Revival.
Yes, it seems like anybody that was going to SmackDown was going to get buried because Raw wanted to show that where they're going to is a B-list show.
Stupid.
It's irrelevant.
Stupid.
But here's the thing. Same thing happened with people that were coming up from SmackDown to Raw.
I just thought it was more
The Miz. Dean Ambrose beat Kevin Owens clean as Kevin Owens was heading his way out. But The Miz, who's supposed to be a big acquisition, gets destroyed by Sami Zayn on his way out.
In the new company that he's working for.
Yeah, it just completely... It proves the fact here, Jeff, where I don't know if it's the writing or it's done on purpose, and this is where, you know, kayfabe comes into favor. Like, are they really competing against each other? I don't really know. But they're doing everything they can to make SmackDown Live seem inadequate, that it's just a B show. And where this came with the A show, B show, to me, I think it's total crap. There's no question. Nobody convinced me otherwise that SmackDown Live has the better product. For a three-hour show, Raw does a pretty bad job of kind of grabbing your attention. And SmackDown Live does it, and nobody's ever going to admit it. Even Vince himself, I think, will never admit it. If SmackDown Live beats Raw in the ratings for 5 straight years, it'll just be, nah, didn't exist. And that's the case. I don't think it'll ever happen. I just don't know why it doesn't make sense, because you're competing up against yourself, right? Where does it hurt you to make both products very strong? Because you're only benefiting yourself. It's not like you're competing against WCW and trying to make them better or promoting Ring of Honor or New Japan. You're promoting yourself, so why would you bring yourself down?
I don't get it. Anything else that sets your eye on SmackDown? Charlotte's there now. Tamina's there. I like the women's division. It's a change of pace.
It's a change of pace. It's a new. It's a fresh look. I mean, I think Alexa Bliss going to Raw is huge for the Raw women's division. Charlotte coming down, it presents new matchups. Even Naomi had mentioned one time, and how look how relevant Talking Smack is, right? That she wanted to try to compete against Charlotte because she thought they would have good matches
and
together.
Becky's still there.
Becky's still there. So now I think they've spread the four horsewomen evenly now. Charlotte and Becky on one side, Bayley and Sasha on the other. Becky was by herself, but Becky held her own. So now it'll be interesting for them to maybe rehash that rivalry. So it just brings newer dynamics, newer matchups that people haven't seen for a small little shakeup. But again, the rumor is that, too, they're probably going to have a draft in the fall. So I was like, then what's the point of all this?
Yeah, I would wait till – I would just say, okay, after WrestleMania, then we're going to shake things up. It should be once a year.
It should be once a year. Usually, I think the night after WrestleMania or the week after WrestleMania, yeah, it should be a draft again, and you should reshuffle everything.
Let everything happen, man.
Yeah, you're gonna give it a couple. You're gonna give it more than what, 6 months?
Like July maybe again, twice in a year.
Well, they said the fall. They're gonna do a draft. I'm like, you're gonna do it in September. So how many months are you giving?
It can't be July now because it'd be like, you know. But wow, that's
makes no sense.
Weird, twice in a year.
And this is goes back to the saying, Jeff, when we talk about like matches and matchups, you're doing it for the sake of doing it. That doesn't make much sense. There has to be a purpose behind why you're doing it. But again, to me, winners and losers, I think Raw got some great acquisitions in terms of winners.
Who's a steal?
A steal? Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens?
To me, he's the steal of SmackDown. He's the United States champion. Now, granted, Dean Ambrose was the Intercontinental title. Very unlikely they're going to have two titles on the same side, the Intercontinental and the United States. But I think what Kevin Owens can do with that title and the matches he has with the guys he has there, like a Ty Dillinger, Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, they can relive that rivalry again.
Salivating, yeah.
Gets you salivating. And AJ Styles has now become the number one contender for the United States title, depending on what the outcome is at Payback between Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. And like I said, that just leaves you more intrigued and makes you salivating at the mouth that, wow, this is going to be pretty cool. And you're going to have certain types of storylines. You're going to have better dynamics than what Raw can give you. So to me, Kevin Owens was the steal of the shakeup. Charlotte, too, to an extent as well.
How about Raw? Who is the steal for Raw?
That's hard to say. Like, if there was any relevancy left in Bray Wyatt, I would say Bray Wyatt.
Can I mention Alexa Bliss?
Alexa Bliss.
There's nobody that can talk on that women's division.
Oh, yeah. I even mentioned it to you when she made her way down there. Like, is she going to bury Bayley and Sasha Banks? She's just that good on the microphone. And yeah, you're right. She's a steal. But what I'm talking about long term, as good as Alexa Bliss is, she's not going to carry over the weight as a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn will have now having Shinsuke Nakamura on the blue brand, which we talked about before. He's got to be on SmackDown Live. Right now, Raw, in my opinion, they can bounce back from this because, again, they're always going to consider themselves as the A show. But I think SmackDown Live, wow, what great talent you have there and what great matchups you have potentially for the fan base to watch that.
Hey, you got the wrestling show, and the ratings continue to rise. I think one of the highest ratings in a few years for SmackDown Live is it continues to be the show. I'm pretty sure they'll do a good job. Looking forward to seeing all the new superstars see what they
you made
do
a great point
on
too.
SmackDown.
You said Raw is the entertainment show. SmackDown is the wrestling show.
Yeah. And AJ Styles, I can just watch him fight forever. What a great match with Corbin and Sami Zayn.
Can I didn't expect anything less because AJ Styles always delivers. Sami Zayn's great. And Baron Corbin, you know what? He's holding his own. But he's never a very talented guy. So, you know, for me, it'd probably be like a day off. You just have to live up to those expectations. And Corbin's doing a good job.
I think this is another great episode, my homie.
Oh, and somebody else tied the knot. Dean Ambrose and Renee Young have tied the knot.
How about that, huh?
So they're doing the opposite of what John Cena and Nikki Bella did.
I know. And now, they kept it all hush-hush in private, too, which is, you know, it's a way to go.
Good luck, Renee. You're stuck with that now.
Oh, but another great episode with thanks goes out to Marty Elias. And then next week, Barry Blaustein. Now, why does that name ring a bell? Well, first of all, if you're a wrestling fan, you've seen Beyond the Mat, that documentary in 1999 that followed Mick Foley, Jake the Snake Roberts. I think it's probably the most popular wrestling documentary out there. I guess Wrestling with Shadows, too, but that one also
but I think
a good one,
Beyond
too.
The Mat was first in its kind where it really kind of opened the door more to what was going on behind the scenes. And as soon as Vince found out what it was really about, didn't really approve it and kind of want to do everything to not talk about it.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk to him about interesting thing I saw in Nat Geo, too. I saw Dan Rather do Pro Wrestling's Biggest Secrets, Breaking Kayfabe, which is a great one. And I think Barry Blaustein was a correspondent there, and he talked about the lost art of kayfabe and how wrestlers used to protect it, and now with social media, not so much. So we'll talk about that about him. Maybe get some WrestleMania memories too for him. He is first and foremost a wrestling fan. So it's funny, a professor in a one of the prestigious schools in Chapman University, that he's also a wrestling fan. So you don't see too many of those. But we'll get Barry Blaustein on
next week. But they won't admit it, though.
Yeah, closet wrestling fans.
Closet wrestling. Because we all watched it at one point in our lives. And we've kind of realized that whatever guests we've had on, whether it's had nothing to do with wrestling or it has, they've always grown up knowing it and watching it. So
looking forward to talking to Barry Blaustein again. You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Listen to this episode. We are also available now on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Oh, so very excited, Brian, to be on iTunes finally.
It's about time.
It's about damn time. So, yeah, catch us on iTunes. And you know what? Also, leave a rating and also leave a comment. That's how we find out if you like the show or not. And looking forward to hearing all the feedback from you fans. Again, hit us up on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Again, I can't say it enough. Leave a comment. Leave a review on iTunes. Looking so forward to giving you the best of us every single week. Brian, thank you so much. The trendsetter in the house.
Yes, and after listening to this episode of the High Spot Podcast, folks, and Jeff saying enough times to follow us. Exactly. You're going to find out that your life is just too sweet.